The House Tax Committee will come to order. We do not have a quorum at this time, but we will start with testimony of hearing bills. The hour of 10:15 having arrived. Okay, we'll start out today's agenda with, I do not see Representative Kiefer, so Representative Stensrud, if you could please come down. And members, the House File 974-1120 are for possible inclusion, and then the David's ones, we'll get to them. We'll hold mine till last and get everyone else, all the other bills heard. So when we have a quorum, I will move House File 1003 be before us. And there'll be a delete all amendments. So, Representative Stensrud, welcome to the Tax Committee. If you could please present your bill as if it was amended the way you would like at this point, with a DE1 amendment on the bill. Please describe the bill. And first of all, are there any members of the audience that wish to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns on the bill? And again, members, this will be for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax, but when we have a quorum here, we will lay out the calendar for the next few days. Okay, please present your bill, sir.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1003, as amended, really just provides a needed tax relief for low and middle income families across our state. I know in my district, out in the suburbs, and as in many of those for the members on the board, on the committee here, you know, it's people who are maybe working at one of the corporate headquarters in middle management, a spouse working another job just to make ends meet. These are people who have experienced in private industry cuts in pay, a decrease in hours worked that are available to them. They've frozen their salaries in many instances. They find their health care costs going up, gas prices are going up, and they're struggling to save for college tuition someday and even making their mortgages. And I think we see that reflected in the housing markets as people are struggling to keep their homes. So that's the group that is really targeted in this this tax relief. And these reductions phase in over the next 3 years to provide some real needed relief in the working class families of our state. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Representative Stensrud. Pretty straightforward. And again, we're working out the DE1 amendment as it will be amended when we have a quorum. Any questions for the author? Representative Paymar?
Mr. Chair, just curious, I didn't. What would be the average income? What would be the average annual amount that someone in the lower bracket and the middle bracket would actually get? I don't have the chart. I think
Mr.
we had
Michael,
it last time. But.
Or Ms. Manzi, if you could address the Paymar question, please.
So if we reduce the lower bracket to 4.75 and the middle bracket to 6.75, what would be the average annual?
Ms. Manzi, if you could give the dollar amount and the percentage of savings.
Roughly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have the average reduction in each of the 3 years of the phased-in reduction by income range. I don't have it where you isolate out just the bottom bracket, excuse me, the bottom bracket change and the middle bracket change, but that's something I could calculate for you. So for the first year, in tax year 12, for households with adjusted gross income under $50,000, the average reduction would be $17. For those with adjusted gross income from $50,000 to $100,000, it would be $67. $100,000 to $250,000, it would be $157. $250,000 to $500,000, $207. $500,000 and over $176, and for all filers across all income ranges, it would be $64 on average in the first year. The reason that the average drops for those at $500,000 of income and over is that this is for all individuals with Minnesota income tax returns, and that includes part-year residents and non-residents who would be apportioning their tax to Minnesota. And the other thing that's happening is that some high-income filers would shift onto the state's alternative minimum tax with this rate reduction, so they wouldn't enjoy as much of a dollar amount reduction as somebody in the who's got a lower income.
Ms. Manzi, what percent would that be for each bracket? Percentage of income.
Mr. Chair, I don't have that here. I have a percentage of income or a percent. I have percent change in tax for example taxpayers. For example, for a married couple with two dependents, again in the first year of the change, tax year 12, with $50,000 of income, it would be approximately a 2% reduction in Minnesota tax. That percentage would increase to about 2.5% for filers with 100 married couples with two dependents with $150,000 of adjusted gross income. And that would be, it looks like for the example households I've calculated, it would be 2.5% would be about the largest percentage decrease.
Okay. Representative Paymar?
Well, let me just ask Representative Stensrud a question then. So in my district, I would have a lot of people who would probably get that $67 for being in the $50,000, $100,000 range. And throughout the rest of St. Paul, I suppose they would get their $17. So I just want to make sure that they can use the $17 or the $67 to pay for the hundreds and thousands of dollars in increases in property taxes. That's okay to do that, isn't it? If the tax bill passes out of this committee.
Representative Stensrud?
Mr. Chair and Representative Paymar, I would think they would appreciate any tax, any income tax reductions that we could provide for them, and I think they would appreciate that.
But they can use
Representative Paymar?
They can use that to pay the increases in property taxes that will result in the cuts from local government aid.
This bill is not regarding local government aid, but to Representative Stensrud.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Paymar. Yeah, my intention is really to address the income tax issue, and this bill really isn't about property taxes. So,
yeah, thank you.
And Representative Paymar, I'm sure we'll have those discussions as we move on. Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and actually a question to Ms. Manzi. The 2.5% decrease in taxes for married filing jointly kids with 250,000 adjusted gross. What decile, what income decile would that place those taxpayers in?
Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I didn't bring the incidence study with me. Generally, a household with $250,000 of income in past studies has been in the 10th decile. I don't have access to the incidence study database, which includes more households than does the income tax sample, because it includes households that don't file income tax returns. So I can't so much do that decile analysis, but I think that, well, I think if we look up where the top decile is, we'll find that it's probably below $250,000 of adjusted gross income.
So, Dabney?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Manzi, is it then fair to say that the greatest percentage advantage under the representative's bill goes to the top decile in the state?
Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, there's a number of different ways you can slice this. I think that, and I just did some example households. I didn't do every income possible.
Ms. Mansby, before you start slicing here, we have a quorum. I'll officially call the Tax Committee meeting to order. Representative Erickson moves the minutes of March 14th. Any additions
or corrections?
Mr. Chair,
I was excused, so I don't think
excused,
I should
so
move them.
Oh, you didn't move them. Representative Drazkowski moves the minutes of March 14th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Ms. Mansby and Representative Dabney, you still have the floor here. So, I will move the 1003 be before the Tax Committee. I will now move H1003DE1 to get the amendment in the bill in the shape the author would like. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill before us. Ms. Mansby, if you could please answer the Dabney question.
I'm sorry, Representative Dabney, could you repeat your question?
Representative
please?
Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Mansby, what I'm hearing, what I think I'm hearing from you is that either the largest percentage tax advantage or the largest dollar amount tax advantage under this proposal goes to the top decile. And
Ms. Mansby?
I'm trying to understand that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I think it's accurate to say that households in the top decile would tend to enjoy a larger average dollar reduction in taxes under this proposal, and also a larger reduction in terms of when you figure the reduction as a percentage of their tax. But another thing to consider.
No.
It's 2.5% of their tax if they're over 150.
It's going to be a flat.
Okay. But the largest dollar advantage goes to the highest decile.
Well, the highest percentage goes to the.
I see. This is the difficulty with my having specific examples for specific income levels. For a married couple with household income or adjusted gross income of $150,000, their percentage reduction in tax is 2.5%. That's going to be about the highest percentage reduction in tax that any household will experience. As income continues to increase, the amount of the tax reduction under this proposal is going to be a fixed amount. It's going to be the reduction in the rate in the first bracket rate times the amount of taxable income in the first bracket, plus the reduction in the rate on the second bracket rate times the amount of income in the second bracket. And once your taxable income exceeds the top of the second bracket, your tax decrease, it's over. You're not going to get any more than that. So as your income continues to increase, then your reduction as a percentage of your tax will go down. So, for example, a married couple household with $500,000 of adjusted gross income, their percentage reduction in tax will be 0.7%. Now, the other point that I wanted to come back to is that although the percentage reduction is higher for the household with $150,000 of adjusted gross income than it is, for example, for the household with $50,000 of adjusted gross income, another way to look at this is where the total dollar amount of the reduction is distributed across the income range. And simply because there are more households in the first nine deciles, nine times more than in the top decile, more of the dollars are going to go to the first nine deciles than to the top decile. So that's another way to look at this.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you. I think we've gotten through to where we need to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Stenzer, for bringing this forward. And I passed my tax incidents report over there, and I think we've all had one delivered now, and I hope members will take a look at it, including the author of this bill. The new tax incidents report, of course, shows that it continues to be the case that the wealthiest Minnesotans pay a smaller percentage, a significantly smaller percentage, of their income on state and local taxes. And so, you know, I'm glad to see this bill here. I will say, just in thinking about this bill, and my guess is, Mr. Chair, it's not on the calendar if it's not being considered for the omnibus tax bill. And I know Representative Paymar, you know, was talking about the property tax. you know, if there's a property tax increase, as there is in Representative Runbeck's bill, and that's not this bill. So I understand that, but I think we are going to want to see that analysis. But I would, you know, Representative Paymer, I think, will be interested to find that the income tax cut will not begin to pay the property tax increase in the bill for most Minnesotans. But I do think this bill that you've got, Representative Stensrud, it's not quite clear if this makes the income tax system more or less progressive, or more or less regressive. And I think listening, you know, that's something we need to understand. But I heard you say it when you started, and I've heard your leadership say this is a tax cut for low and middle income Minnesotans. Would you agree that's not, that the more accurate way to present that would be it is a tax cut, an income tax cut for all Minnesotans? I mean, I think what's happening in the public is they think this tax cut's going to go to low income Minnesotans and middle. But in fact, as we've just heard, no, it goes to every income taxpayer, and in dollars, it goes significantly more to the wealthiest Minnesotans. Would you agree that it's an income tax cut for everyone?
Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and two members. Yeah, it is an income tax reduction for income at that level. So the fact that people who make a greater income have income at the lower levels as well, and then they grow more. But I think in my neighborhood, there's just a whole lot more people who are making a median sort of income, you know, $25,000 to $75,000, and that's really where I wanted to target this. So if we want to talk about progressive or, you know, how you want to characterize the tax code, you know, it's probably better suited for this esteemed body here to discuss, and I won't comment on that.
Okay, you still have the floor, Mr. Lencheski, but before we go back to you, we have high school students here, Homeschool Adventures. Well, I guess they enjoyed the committee so much that they just had to leave. Sarah, are you from Homeschool Adventures? Or? Oh, you're not. Okay. Okay, thank you for that. Sorry, Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, you know, the reason I want to point that out to you, Representative Stensrud, is that I'm finding my constituents don't understand this concept. It seems pretty simple to legislators and certainly to tax committee members, but I think it's worth repeating. There is nobody above the low bracket and the middle bracket who doesn't pay the low and the middle bracket. But when residents hear people say this, they think it means a bill like this is just for tax cuts for low-income Minnesotans or just for middle-income Minnesotans, and that's absolutely not the case. It's for everybody in the income tax system, and at much higher dollar amounts for folks with higher incomes. So I think Representative Loeffler said this once in another committee explaining the income tax code to Minnesotans. Sometimes, you know, people don't always think of it that if there's a tier, it doesn't click on till you fall over that tier in a dollar amount. So the third tier doesn't start until you've paid on the first tier and the second tier, third. The governor's proposing a fourth. But this bill before us is an income tax cut to all Minnesotans, not just low and middle income Minnesotans. But, you know, Mr. Chair, as we go forward, and I, you know, as I said, I like this. I have a bill very similar, and in fact, 2 years ago, I did a bill to repeal all the tax expenditures and lower the income tax. And if we would get rid of all the hidden spending in the tax expenditure, we could dramatically reduce income taxes in Minnesota permanently in a revenue-neutral way. And I think that's what we should be doing, but there hasn't been a political will to do that. Mr. Chair, though, as we go forward, I think it will, you know, we in the minority, and I'm sure you in the majority would like to see the incidence of the total omnibus tax bill, because early indications to me seem like if this bill were to make it into your omnibus tax bill and Chair Runbeck's bill would make it in, the overall bill would be significantly more regressive than the current tax system. But just setting this bill on its own, there's another piece that I think members of this committee have to think about. We think of progressivity and regressivity, just how the rates are changing within the income tax code, but I want to ask the nonpartisan staff if this is accurate. When we look at the total tax system, you know, state and local combined, just this bill passing, not your omnibus tax bill, Mr. Chair, if this bill passed right now and became law, isn't it the case that because you're taking less revenue out of the income system, thereby you're using more revenue in all the other systems, which are all more regressive, you're on net making the entire Minnesota tax system more regressive? Is that an accurate statement?
Ms. Manzi or Mr. Michael? Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, I think just to speak generally before we maybe try to get into the specifics of this bill, generally it would sometimes be the case that when you take the income tax and reduce it in a way that makes it more progressive, it would sometimes make the overall system more progressive, and it would sometimes make the overall system more regressive. And which way it went would depend on the magnitude of the change within the income tax, as far as whether it made a very large increase in the progressivity of the income tax compared to the size of the dollar amount of the share of the income tax as a portion of the overall tax system. So if you were to make a change, for instance, in the income tax that made the income tax much more progressive than it currently is, okay, but didn't on net reduce the revenue raised by the income tax by very much, then that sort of change would make the overall system less regressive or move it in a progressive direction. If, in contrast, you made a change in the income tax that made it somewhat more progressive and took a whole lot of revenue out of the income tax, then that would tend to make the overall system more regressive, because you're totally reducing the slice of the pie that is progressive. I think that we would have to study the incidence study and the share of the various taxes and do some calculations to figure out just what the effect of this proposal would be on the overall system.
Well, Mr. Chair,
anything?
Okay, Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Then, you know, just back to the Stansrud bill, then, I think it's not this bill. It's any proposal. I wish Representative Downey was here, and I'm sure if this makes it in the omnibus tax bill, I'll have an opportunity to repeat it. But Representative Downey frequently would challenge our side of the aisle in this committee for the last 2 years that, you know, if you guys care about regressivity, why don't you cut a regressive tax? And instead of raising a progressive tax, why don't you cut a regressive tax? You know, this bill cuts a progressive tax. So kind of exactly the opposite way you'd want to move here. If you wanted to just make the income tax system more progressive, you'd do it in a revenue-neutral way. You wouldn't take the dollars out of the system. So I will be interested to see the analysis of all these provisions as we go forward, because all signs point to things moving in the opposite direction of the way the governor's looking for, and I know we all want to be done on May 23rd, so I appreciate that we're maybe some people don't, but I do, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lencheski. And if members would just look at a handout that they had impact on Representative Households, House File 42DE. Well, this will be, you should have this, the year 2014, for example, if you look at a head of household, one dependent, income $40,000 under, the lowest bracket shows a 38.1% decrease in their tax, and then you go up to the $500,000 and above, and it's just 1.2. So there's several ways to look at it. But before we go to Representative Drazkowski, we are going to introduce the high school students from the Homeschool Adventures. Now, I need to ask someone, like, what cities or suburbs or county or, like, all over the place, or...
Plymouth.
Sarah, could you find out? Well, welcome so much to the tax committee. Let's welcome them. Okay, now, again, members, this bill is just for possible inclusion, and so we'll have another debate, I'm sure, on this. I would like to, we will be going to the Kiefer bill, then we have a Mellon bill, then Anderson, who's a member of this committee. We want to get to some of these folks that are not on the tax committee, but on this bill is before us for possible inclusion as amended. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I guess my question is for Representative Lencheski. Realizing Representative Garofalo is not here, I need to fill in for him today. Representative Lencheski, you mentioned the tax incidence study. The new one is out. Does it still say that if you include all incomes, local, state, and federal, that the upper income earners are still paying more as a percentage of their income than lower income earners are?
Person Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Draskowski, it doesn't, and it never has, because of the reason you raised. Representative Garofalo would like to add the federal tax system. It's not in there. He's got a bill, and I believe it's already in the chair's mark to do that. But the Representative Stensrud bill, if it became a part of the tax system, would still apply. Would overall most likely make the tax system more regressive, whether you add what we've got in the new report, add Representative Garofalo's items or not, wouldn't change the impacts of this bill.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Lencheski, if you extrapolate and look at what federal income tax rates are, I would expect that you would still come up with the same results. It'll be interesting to see, and you're correct, I do remember that he is adding that as an amendment, and it'll be interesting to see that. Members, I just am really perplexed here. Representative Stensrud is coming forward, I think, with a really good approach to cutting the income tax rate for Minnesotans, and he does a good job targeting it on the lowest income tax rates we have. I don't understand. What would be the income tax reduction bill that the Democrats would like to see if it's not this one? Or is it just that what would the ideal bill be? Would it be one that is like Representative Stensrud's bill but says if you're over a certain amount, you don't get this tax cut? Is that what it would be? Or is it just that the Democrats don't want to see tax cuts for Minnesotans? I'm not really sure what it is. I'm kind of perplexed here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loeffler, and then Bills, and then Tilbury. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Stensrud. I haven't had a chance to meet or work with you much, but appreciate your being here. I'm concerned about the kind of long-term implications of this, and I know we're often criticized because we have shifted expenditures into future bienniums to balance budgets, but I think the citizenry is kind of on to us sometimes when we play these things. We kind of have things that in the future cost a lot more than they cost currently. And the first year cost is $61 million, but then we get to $500 million when you get out in 4 years permanently. And I'm concerned about a permanent $500 million less, which seems to, since I think the public's kind of worn out on deficit after deficit after deficit. And with our... a lot of attention now on the census and demographics. Our state demographer has told us that we really need to start worrying because with the baby boom retiring and a change, we're going to have actually less collections. And so, Mr. Representative Stensrud, can you tell me about how you think we should be adjusting to, the balance that you see here in terms of this a permanent $500 million less revenue going into the future and how you see that balancing with our obligations in other ways so that we're able to accommodate that.
Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. To the question, I think I'm kind of the new guy here, being a freshman, first time before the tax committee. And so I still have sort of the average citizen approach to it. If I would talk to anyone in my neighborhood or anyone in my district and told them that we're going to let the taxpayers of Minnesota keep over the next few years $500 million of their income, and we're not going to tax them, $500 million, they'd be very pleased that we were actually, taking some of that tax burden off of them. So that's really my perspective, and that was really my intent, with this simple bill. So I don't know if that addresses your question or not. But
now, members, we've got about 85 members on here for a very simple bill that we're not voting on. But, of course, we want a full discussion of it. I would like to get to the Kiefer and Mellon bills if we can. If we can't do the Mellon bill, I guess we won't do the Mellon bill. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that you're new to the legislature and welcome. But I do think, like I said, I think the public has started to kind of grow weary of deficit after deficit, and they're definitely tired of the cutbacks in the schools and the increasing class size, and they're starting to get that these things are intertwined. And I'd kind of made a commitment to my voters that I'm going to try as much as possible to focus on that as we're discussing these fiscal issues. And I think we need to weigh them, because I think it does get translated into impacts on people's lives, and we need to be up front when we're creating things that have tails into the future that are expensive. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Bills?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I value bringing this Representative Stenzer, thanks for bringing this forward in our discussion here. You know, in terms of regressivity and what I've seen in the news just the last few days, and we do have to have a discussion about how do we afford placing more dollars in the pockets of people who need it the most, especially when wholesale food prices jump, you know, to their largest degree since 1974, and new housing starts are at a 27-year low, as reported yesterday. And I just start thinking about that most horrific of regressive taxes, and that is printing money and destroying the purchasing power of working class people. And I really hope, and everybody has their own little soapbox that they get up on in terms of this tax or that tax, and this is definitely mine, because I've watched it closely for 14 years, and the things that I'm seeing currently are absolutely horrific. And I really hope and encourage people on both sides to begin investigating and learning about this. And that is that when you expand the monetary base, when you print money, literally doubling the amount of money in circulation or on the Fed's balance sheet in 3 years compared to the last 95 years, that's going to lead to certain price adjustments in things that people buy, like food and clothing and gasoline. And how are we going to handle that as a state legislature? I sometimes worry about what can we do. And I really think that we should begin studying that as well, but I thank you for bringing this forward so that we can have a discussion about that. And I guess I have no question, Mr. Chairman. I apologize.
Thank you, Representative Bills. And I apologize to Representative Moline. I hate it when somebody says my name wrong. You know, they'll say, well, how do you spell your name? And I say, well, my name's Greg. And they say, are there one G or two Gs? So I say, well, there's two. So then they go G-R-E-G-G. And it just drives me crazy. So, Representative Moline, I apologize for that. What was that one name we had where it had nothing to do with what it was spelled? Yeah, okay. Okay, Representative Tilbury Gotwell Loon Lesh. Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Stensrud, it may appear that you have a simple bill here, but here on the Tax Committee, from what I gathered in the years that I've served here, is that in a simple bill like this, you have to be able to pay for it, because that's what we do on the Tax Committee. If you're going to have a tax break or tax cut, you have to figure out how on the Tax Committee you pay for this. So on the one side, you're saying, well, we're going to give everybody a break. And then we heard from all kinds of people saying how much of a break this will be, and this is the greatest thing and whatever. But in order to pay for it, I think Representative Paymar kind of hit it right on the head. You raise property taxes in order to do it. That's probably what's going to happen in this particular deal when it finally comes where we actually see the tax bill and when the property tax piece comes in with it. So in order to save somebody a buck and then charge maybe some households five or six to pay for it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But that doesn't necessarily mean anything to your bill.
Thank you, Representative Tilbury. Representative Gottwald, Loon and Lesh. Representative Gottwald.
Well, just briefly, as we talk through this discussion about whether or not these kind of tax breaks or tax cuts or tax reductions or leaving money in people's pockets benefit us or not, I would point out from 2002 to 2005, Minnesota's income tax revenue increased 16%. It increased from 2002 to 2005. So we might want to keep that in mind.
Thank you, Representative Gottwald. Representative Loon, and then Lesh. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to thank Representative Stensrud for bringing the proposal forward, and obviously a lot of debate is going to occur on this, but you know, from my standpoint, again, talking about, you know, regressivity, progressivity, I'm pleased to see something put forward in which we are trying to keep more of Minnesota's taxpayers' hard-earned dollars in their pocket. And we can talk about, you know, cuts to programs and what's going to be happening with the budget in total. But, you know, and as Representative Downey would talk about as well, you know, if we're taking money out of the private sector into the government sector, we're assuming that the money is going to be put to better use there. And more money in the pockets of working people is going to go into the economy in some manner, you know, whether it's purchase of goods and services, which, again, encourages production of those goods and services and the people who work in those industries and spurring employment. So, I mean, there is an effect to doing this, just like there is an effect to putting money into the government for spending. And I think it's the business of the legislature to determine where best that money does some good. And I think Representative Stensrud, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but my interpretation of it is that it does more good when it's left in the hands of the people who earn it and to go into the private sector. And I appreciate him bringing this forward.
Senator Lesch. Well, I'm sorry, Representative. I'm a visionary. Representative Lesch.
Chair. Happy St. Patrick's Day. And happy St. Patrick's Day, Representative Stensrud. Welcome to the Tax Committee. You know, I remember those Irish a few years ago gotten themselves in a little bit of trouble because they had some programs that they weren't paying for, and it was talk amongst the European Union they're going to have to be bailed out. Now, I haven't heard yet how you're going to pay for this $500 million. But I'm sure you don't want us to be in a position like those Irish were. Those Irish, though, they've never really been accused of being too responsible. But in Minnesota, we pride ourselves on being responsible, making sure we pay for our bills. Now, I don't know if you want to pay for it with property taxes. I'm not sure if Representative Tilbury's right. But I'm sure you're going to pay for it somehow. I'm sure you have some idea about how this is we're going to pay for it. So I'd like to hear your ideas about how we're going to pay for this $500 million.
Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I appreciate the question. If we look to the European models, I think they spend even more than we do in the state of Minnesota, and I think they spent themselves almost into oblivion. If you look at the riots in Greece and in Spain, you know, big international troubles, and I think the root of that comes from spending. That's what I heard in Minnesota as I was campaigning, and that's what I continue here and see in my emails. People are concerned about our spending. They don't mind taxes and paying taxes when they get a good value for their dollar. But I think they want to see the same savings and look at the lean approach that is taken on by some of the Fortune 100 companies we have. I've been at General Mills with some of the representatives just recently and have seen how they're saving literally billions of dollars in the last couple of years, and they're going to save $4 billion more in the next decade. And I think that the taxpayers in my district expect that kind of approach to the state budget. You know, when you have a $32 billion budget or a $34 billion enterprise, you know, there is a lot of ways you can lean that up. We can provide better services faster, and we can save efficiencies along the way. And I think there's a willingness, I think, on both sides of the aisle to find those savings, and that's really where I would prefer to look at. And I think there's a great opportunity there.
Members, we're going to wrap this one up by 11 o'clock because we have some testifiers from out of town on other bills, and we will get to them. Representative Lesch, Rukavina, Hortman, Marquardt, but at 11 we're going to lay it over for possible inclusion. Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Stensrud, I appreciate that, but you did not answer my question. You need to say where you're going to find a $500 million. That's a big chunk of coin. That's a lot of money. And efficiencies, there's no question that putting someone in financial crisis like this would put the state in, would force the state to find efficiencies. But you can't just stomp through the grass and scare the snakes out and see where they go and count them up. You actually have to have a plan for how you're going to pay for it. And I need you to tell me now, with this bill up in consideration, because it's your bill, where would you intend to cut in order to pay for $500 million?
Well, Representative Sten, it's not Representative Stensrud's responsibility to do that. He has a bill here very specific to what he's doing. It'll be up to this committee to do that, but if you want to comment on that, Representative Stensrud, that's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No.
Okay. And Representative Lesh, you're right. Eventually we'll have to, but at this point in time we don't have to. Okay, Representative Rukavina Hortman Marquardt.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, not being the brightest guy, I'm going to try to put this into a lunchbox versus briefcase kind of example. So when I'm looking at these tax cuts, you're going to have about 1.6 million taxpayers who carry a lunchbox to work are going to get about $40 back a year. And you're going to have about 400,000 people that make over 100 grand that carry a briefcase to work that are going to get about $180 a year. And then the people that carry the lunchbox and got 40 lousy bucks a year back under the plan are going to have to pay for their ma or grandma in the nursing home more, and then they're going to probably have to pay more to for their septic system fee at the county or to plow the roads or whatever. There's no way that this is more fair. It's as simple as that. It defies common sense.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not on the Ways and Means Committee, but I know that you are and other members of this committee are. And what is the amount that higher ed is being cut in the budget resolution?
I'm not sure, and could we please stick to House File 1003?
Well, I am on House File 1003 because the money comes from somewhere, and it's just, I find it kind of ironic that there's about a $400 million cost to this, and isn't there about a $400 million cut to higher ed? And I guess what I was wondering, question for our tax staff is there an incidence study on the impact of something like a higher education cut or a tuition increase on different deciles of income in the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Michael? Or Michael?
Ms. Chair, Representative Hortman, I'm not aware of any breakdowns on, you know, what public college tuition is paid by income class, but you know, maybe somebody has that. But.
Mr. Chair, my point is that the increasing tuition is a tax on middle class families. And when I was lucky enough to serve on Representative Rukavina's higher ed committee in 07-08, he fought for and got a very good higher ed target so that we wouldn't be burdening middle income families with higher tuition. And we worked very hard to constrain the growth of administrative costs in higher ed and hold the line on tuition. And now what I see in the budget resolution coming forward this year so far is that we're cutting higher education by $441 million, and we have a tax increase on property taxpayers and an income tax decrease that basically cancel each other out and make the code more regressive overall. I don't think that helps middle-class families. I think the thing that helps middle-class families is when they can afford to send their kids to college. And I respect that Representative Stensrud doesn't want to answer the question of how do you pay for your proposal, but I really think that is our responsibility here in the Tax Committee. These decisions we're making are about how much money there is in the budget to spend on other things that are important. And if we're cutting higher education by $441 million, and this has a cost of $441 million, I say, well, it's pretty easy to figure out how we're paying for this fake tax cut. The decisions we make here are not in isolation. They fit with other decisions we make in other committees. And I think it would be irresponsible of this committee to not look at the entire picture as we look at the individual bills and the revenue that we're raising.
Being the bipartisan chair I am, I have Marquardt and Downey. We're not going to listen to either of them. so we're going to lay, the chair lays over House File 1003 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Now, members, I wouldn't do that if we're actually taking a vote. I might, but normally I wouldn't if we're going to be taking a vote because that just normally makes more questions. So with that, I will move House File 991. A Kiefer bill. And members, they're moving on. Thank you, Representative Stensrud. I have some really, really good news for the committee. We have Monday, we've got rooms lined up in case we don't get done by midnight Saturday night. We've got rooms lined up through till midnight on Monday night to get the omnibus tax bill done. So just a little review of the schedule. We will be done at noon today. We will not be coming back tonight, and then tomorrow will be 9 to 5 with a break for lunch, and then Saturday is 10 to midnight, and we'll have some breaks for sustenance. And then if we don't get done by then, we'll be able to work throughout the day on Monday. We have rooms reserved until midnight. So I want to thank the Property Tax Division for their work last night. You put in some long, long hours, and so that we'll have the division report. We're not going to get to any of that today. So I'd like to thank the Property Tax Committee for their work. I'd like to thank the staff for all their work, and I'd like to apologize for what we're about to do to you over the next 5 days. So with that being said, I will move House File 991 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Welcome to the Tax Committee. And first of all, is there anyone in the audience that would wish to testify against House File 991? Anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of the bill other than the current witness that we have at the table? Okay, so we'll listen to the description of the bill by the author. We'll take the testimony, and then we'll open up for member questions. Welcome to the committee. So I've moved House File 991 so that it is before the committee. Welcome, Representative Kiefer. If you could please present your bill, and then we will listen to your witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, House File 991, simply reduces the corporate franchise tax rate from 9.8% under the present law to 8.99%, effective for the tax year 2011. This is a small step towards making Minnesota a more business-friendly state. Currently, we have one of the most regressive corporate franchise taxes in the country. And who really pays the corporate tax rate? It's the consumer. We also have high volatility with the corporate tax rate. In 2007, the state collected $1.171 billion. In 2010, it was down to $663.5 million. That's a decrease of 43%. We have the third highest corporate tax rate in the nation, and when you add the federal corporate tax rate on top of it, we are number one globally, and I'll say we as a whole nation are number one globally in corporate tax rates. And I hope that everyone in this committee can acknowledge that we are dealing with a global economy now. So I would, at this time, Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce Mr. Robert Pounds. He's the Senior Vice President of Welsh Commercial Real Estate Services Worldwide.
Welcome to the committee, sir. If you could please state your name for the record and who you represent, and then also if you could spell your last name for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Pounds. Last name is P-O-U-N-D-S. And I'm here as a representative of the International Council of Shopping Centers, ICSC, just to shorten it and make an acronym. Founded in 1957, the International Council of Shopping Centers is the global trade association of the shopping center industry. Its 60,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and more than 80 other countries include shopping centers owners, developers, managers, marketing specialists, investors, lenders, retailers, and other professionals, as well as academics and public officials. As the global industry trade association, ICSC, links with more than 25 national and regional shopping center councils throughout the world. ICSC is supportive of House File 991. We would like to thank Representative Kiefer for authoring this legislation. Although we believe this bill is a stepping stone, it is a definite move in the right direction. My only suggestion would be to reinforce to the committee that this measure must be one component of a more holistic approach. As an example, it would be no benefit to our industry if corporate income tax relief results in increased property tax liability and or revenue expense shifts that prove to heighten the corporation's cost of doing business in the state. We want to stress the need for reducing burdens, tax burdens, regulatory burdens, and otherwise on a very fragile commercial real estate industry as it struggles to recover from a collapse of historic proportions. In today's global economy, corporations face tough choices as to under what condition and as to where they will invest their capital. And I think we all agree we want to ensure that Minnesota is a choice for them. This choice to invest in Minnesota is enhanced when businesses perceive the state's tax and regulatory environment to be business friendly. I want to thank the chairman and committee for allowing me to testify in support of House File 991. Please use the knowledge of trade associations such as the International Council of Shopping Centers when you work on business taxation issues. Thank you again for inviting me to speak today.
Thank you, Mr. Pounds. Any questions for Mr. Pounds or the author or members? Okay, with that, the chair will lay over House File 991 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Kiefer, and thank you, Mr. Pounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Okay, the chair will move House, or Representative Rukavina will move House File 974 so that it is before the committee a Moline bill. Which one is it? Oh, here it is. Okay, Rukavina moves House File 974. Welcome to the committee, Representative Moline. Rukavina moves the A1 amendment, an author's amendment?
Yes, it is.
Okay, Representative Rukavina moves the H0974A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Rukavina. Okay, Representative Moline, welcome to the Tax Committee. We have 974 as amended before us. Is this, Representative Moline, is this the first bill you've presented?
No.
Before the Tax Committee?
Yes.
Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, Representative Moline, you were supposed to bring him a bag of taconite.
Or a lump of coal. Well, welcome to the committee, Representative Moline. If you could please present your bill, but I guess before you do, if we could see if there is anyone in the audience that would wish to testify with concerns on House File 974 as amended. Is there anyone that would wish to testify on behalf of this bill? And the motion would, the motion would be that we would move House File 974 as amended to the Judiciary Committee. I believe that would be the route we would go from here.
Mr. Chair?
Okay, Representative Moline. Yes, Representative Rukavina.
Motion, I believe the amendment took out the, but ma'am, I'm not sure Mr. Michael can help me. It took out Representative Smith's concern about the tax court, which was
Mr. Michael
in tackling taxes. Just mimic, but
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if the reason to move the bill to the Judiciary Committee is the provision in the original bill that provided for review by the tax court, the author's amendment deleted that. So,
Mr. Chair, I don't believe it would have to go there.
Okay, why don't you present your bill? We'll kind of figure out where we think it needs to go. So we're just going to move your bill at this point that it's going to go somewhere if it passes. I don't know if that's a motion.
Is that a motion?
It is now. Okay, Representative Moline, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I appreciate you taking the time today to hear my first major bill as a new legislator. Yeah. I will try to explain it as well as I can and to answer your questions to the best of my ability. Although if there are some complex questions about the long history of taconite tax, I may defer to Representative Rukavina, who has been representing the Iron Range for almost as long as I've been alive.
That was hurtful. And I will, the motion will be to, unless there's a problem here, to go to the General Register. If some chair thinks they need to see it, we can do a motion from the floor. But for now, we're going to the General Register if it passes this robust committee. Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, I thought, you know, being that you're a co-author on this, you put it in the omnibus tax.
Well, we want it to pass. Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill that you have in front of you is designed to bring clarity to the mining of non-ferrous materials. And as many of you, or all of you probably know, that currently we don't have any mines operating that mine non-ferrous materials here in Minnesota.
But when they begin operation, which we all hope is very soon, we want to have a clear understanding of how those operations will be taxed and where that revenue will be distributed. It's necessary to be proactive right now, so when these mines are up and running, we know where the profits and where the revenue from those profits are going to go. My bill essentially mimics our distribution of taconite tax income, and my bill is similar to the pennies per ton tax on taconite, which is a portion of revenue to the state and a portion to our local communities. And turning now to Section 1 of the bill, has to do with occupation tax. And under the Minnesota Constitution, mining operations pay what's called an occupation tax, which is essentially the same as a corporate income tax on the minerals. This is a tax that's paid into the state general fund. And when we recently asked our local non-ferrous mining companies what they anticipated to pay in taxes under the current law, the way that it was written, it appeared that they were off kilter with what corporations pay in Minnesota as far as state and local taxes. And so what my bill does, for start with the occupation tax, is it changes the rate of occupation tax from 2.4% to 1.1%, which we believe is more in line with companies such as 3M and other corporations in Minnesota with what they pay in the corporate income tax. Turning to Section 2 of the bill, has to do with the net proceeds tax. And as you know, in Minnesota, mines don't pay local property taxes. Instead, what they pay in lieu of the local property tax is what's called the net proceeds tax. And what my bill does is it changes the net proceeds tax from 2%, which is what it is in current law, to 3.3%. And again, that would be similar to what other corporations in Minnesota pay, like 3M, in local property taxes. So overall, the changes to the occupation tax and the net proceeds tax actually doesn't increase the taxation rate at all upon the non-ferrous mining companies. It keeps it at the rate of 4.45%. It just changes the distribution of where those taxes go. Turning to Section 3 of the bill, this is really where we clarified where the net proceeds tax is distributed locally, and again, we tried to do it very similar to how our taconite tax proceeds are distributed in our local communities. Oftentimes, our mines and plants are in two different or sometimes several taxing districts, different cities, different school districts, and so we wanted to make sure that the non-ferrous tax structure was similar to what our taconite tax structure is, and that all those taxing districts are getting their fair share of the revenue. And so in my bill, it just changes the language to distribution to the city or town within which the minerals or energy resources are mined or extracted, or within which the concentrate was produced. And again, that's to make sure that when there are different taxing districts covering the mine or the plant, that they're getting their fair share of the revenue. And that applies to the cities and towns and to the school districts as well. And turning to Section 3.5, that again is similar language to what we have in our taconite tax distribution, where 1% of the proceeds go to the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools. Again, just to get it in line with where our taconite dollars go, very similar to what we have in the cents per ton distribution for the taconite tax would be applied to the non-ferrous materials as well. Section 3.8 and 9. Changes 5% to the Doug Johnson Economic Protection Trust Fund to 3%, and 9 changes 5% to the Taconite Environmental Protection Fund to 7% to the Environmental Protection Fund. Again, very similar with how our distribution is in taconite tax distribution. Right now, we have 13 cents per ton going to the Doug Johnson Economic Protection Fund and 42 cents per ton going to the Environmental Protection Fund. So again, that distribution is just getting in line with what we currently have. And then turning to Section 4D, I believe that's one of the sections that my amendment addressed We are removing the escalator on the township distribution, but the townships will still be getting their base income from the revenue. All we did differently was to take off the escalator. And then my amendment does delete all of Section 5 in the bill, so that language will all remain the same as it is in current law. And again, just going back, like we talked about in the beginning, as far as the tax court reference, I did remove that by amendment from the bill, so that this bill wouldn't have to go to judiciary. I believe it's already in law that if there was a challenge to the tax distribution, it would go to tax court automatically, so that language was unnecessary. So at this time, that's kind of the big overview of the bills. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions to the House File 974 as amendment? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Moline, welcome to the committee. And, you know, considering what we're doing here, will this bill in its entirety and all of this, will it generally end up in an increase of revenue to the state?
Representative?
Well, Moline? Thank you, Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer. Currently, there's no fiscal impact because none of these mining operations are up and running right now. But what we did is we did lower the percent that would go to the state general fund, again, to be more along the lines of what a corporation in Minnesota would pay in state tax versus local tax.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
Yeah, I didn't. I'm sorry, Representative Moline. I meant potentially or in the future would, and seeing that. All right. It's interesting that so you're going to reduce this tax so that more matches the corporate. Is that what I heard you say?
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer. It overall the percent that the non-ferrous mining companies will be taxed in my bill is the same overall percent, which is 4.45%. So that doesn't change from what the current law is. It's just that we are decreasing the amount that would go into the state general fund and increasing the net proceeds tax, which is our equivalent of a property tax.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline, I'm assuming that this bill is here today because of the potential for the PolyMet project. And I'm just wondering if you gave any consideration in Section 5 to increase the percentage that would be put into the Taconite Environmental Protection Fund, given the concerns that people have about potential environmental degradation if that mine actually gets up and running.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Paymar. Section 5 was removed by the amendment. That's my intention, is to remove all of Section 5 by the amendment. As I stated earlier, I am increasing the percent that goes to the Taconite Environmental Protection Fund to be more in line with our Taconite tax distribution, where we already put more money into that fund than we do to the Economic Protection Trust Fund.
Mr. Paymar?
I don't see where that is. Can you just point that out? I see now on page 4 that you've deleted section 5. Okay, I see it.
Representative
Moline? I've got it.
Representative Paymar?
I've got it. And Mr. Chair, so Representative Moline, so this is based on the PolyMet plant, just so I'm clear that this is what you're proposing.
Representative Moline?
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, looks like Representative Rukavina wants to jump on this, but yes, PolyMet is one of our mining initiatives that's looking to mine non-ferrous materials.
Thank you.
Representative Paymar?
No, that's it.
Representative Downey, then Anderson. Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my questions might actually be for staff, presumably Mr. Michael. I don't know these taxes very well, so we're reducing the occupation tax. And then we're increasing the net proceeds tax. And I'm wondering if you could just explain those two tax mechanisms, what they're based on, and the interaction.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey there. As Representative Moline indicated, the occupation tax is the tax that's paid instead of the corporate franchise tax. Taconite companies currently pay an occupation tax that's also very similar to this. and it's calculated on a sort of a similar basis to the corporate franchise tax with a couple of important exceptions. The key thing is that it basically looks at sort of the net income from the mining operations only. And so it takes the, and the taconite occupation tax is calculated roughly the same way. So you look at sort of the amount of the value of the production from the mine, and then you're allowed to deduct the expenses that are associated just with the mining. They're not allowed to, you know, deduct their marketing expense and other stuff, unlike the normal corporate tax, so that's one of the deviations. And there's a different apportionment formula. But it's largely a sort of a mining's profits tax, very similar to the corporate franchise tax. Now, what's different between taconite and this, you know, non-ferrous situation is in the taconite tax structure, there's a production tax that's paid in lieu of the property tax, and that's not at all like the occupation tax because it's simply based on the number of tons of ore that's produced by the mining company, and it's a dollar and cents per ton that's produced. The net proceeds tax in this context is very similar to the way the occupation tax is. So, again, it's the net proceeds from mining. There's a couple of little differences in the deductions, but the two taxes are, you know, very, very similar. The one thing about the production tax is it varies, obviously, with the level of production, but it doesn't vary with the profitability of the mining operations. This net proceeds tax will, of course, be sensitive to the amount of production, but it will also be sensitive to whether or not that mining is, the profitability of that mining. So the locals up there are going to suffer some variability, more variability with this tax in terms of revenue than they do with the production tax. It's going to be distributed locally, you know, to the cities, counties, and school districts and so forth.
Gershom Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could just follow up with Mr. Michael then. So the description of these changes as being roughly equal or putting it on a par with a standard corporate franchise tax, again, not knowing quite how to understand the interactions of these two and how mines, you know, track their profits and things, is that a fair representation of these two tax moves kind of working together, that it would make it on a par with the corporate rate?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, essentially what they're doing now is to sort of shift the amount of tax that will be paid under the occupation, that would have been paid under the occupation tax, to the proceeds tax, to sort of line it up with the statewide average of the amount of property tax that's paid by businesses in Minnesota relative to the corporate tax. And so, you know, essentially if you look at all businesses in the state and say, how much do they pay in property taxes relative to how much do they pay in corporate franchise tax, the structure that's in the law now for these non-ferrous mining companies would have them pay a much higher share of the amount that's the tax that's in lieu of the corporate tax and less on the tax that's in lieu of the property tax. And so these two rates are shifting around. But the oddity here is that these two taxes are really both kind of profits taxes, unlike the property tax. So,
Gershom Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I followed that, and I'm reasonably comfortable with it, but I don't know how that math works to know for sure that this is kind of fairly taxing the profits of mines relative to other businesses. But a second question, if I could, and for Representative Moline, I guess, to start, it looks like we're adding this concept of concentrate and concentration. Could you just briefly describe that? I assume that's something unique to the non-ferrous mining process, that concentration activities of some kind or that material is somehow now part of this, where in traditional mining it wasn't, or if you can explain that term, please.
Gershom Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Downey. And that language was added to my bill because, as I explained a little bit earlier, we have sometimes the mine in one taxing district and the plant in another. So they take the minerals from the mine and then the concentrate and produce it in the plant. So the only reason that that language was added so that we make sure that those taxing districts are getting their fair share of the revenue, and again, it's similar, if not same language, as the taconite tax distribution.
I'm going to make an exception here because I don't understand things on the range either. Representative Rukavina.
Here's what's happening.
Microphone,
tax,
please.
In current taconite tax law, Representative Downey, you have like a mine in the Eveleth-Gilbert School District in the city of Eveleth. The mine's there. The plant is out 6-7 miles away, so the concentrating is done there in a different school district and in a different township. And in some mines, like the big one on the hill in Virginia, Mountain Iron area, they're in 3 or 4 different cities. The mine is so big that it could be part of it in the city of Virginia and part of it in the city of Mountain Iron and part of it in a township. And then the concentrating plant can be in a different taxing jurisdiction altogether. When this was put in the early 90s, these percentages, we put the percentages in to try to mimic taconite taxes, but what happened, and I think this is what happened, I have to tell the story quickly. Representative Abrams was the chair of this committee, and Steel Dynamics had, Nisaba Nugget had been given both the state and some IRRB money to develop a process. That mine had never been, it was a new process. And they said they were going to move all of that research that we did and build the first plant in Indiana. And Representative Abrams got mad as hell, and he said, there's not going to be a minerals article. And there wasn't that year, and we forgot to put the language that kind of spells this out like it just does now. How do you do this when there's a different taxing jurisdiction? It's the exact same language that's in current taconite law, just being applied if there's ever non-ferrous to the same concept, because already, as Representative Paymar brought up Polymet, their plant would be in a different school district and city than the mine would be.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm not going to spend a ton of committee time on this. It seems like it's in different little taxing world up there that I don't know that I'll ever fully understand. But
it's kind of like Edina, but different.
Representative Downey, you have the floor.
Thank you. So quick question for Mr. Michael then. Is this kind of unique one-off taxing structure for mining operations unique to Minnesota, or is this done all over the country where you have very distinct tax policy for the mines as compared to other businesses?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, I've looked a little bit at the mining tax structures in other states, and it varies a lot from, and of course the mining is different. The only state that's really comparable to Minnesota is Michigan, which, you know, I don't even know if they still have an operating taconite mine or not. But, you know, when you look, one thing I would say is that no state really taxes the mining operations the way they do most corporations. And in fact, many states sort of use it as a way, when they have a valuable resource, as a way to try to export their tax burden to the users of, you know, whatever the resource is that's outside the state. But it's very typical that you would have a different kind of tax. Oftentimes they have severance taxes, which would be more like a production kind of a tax, where it's just based on, you know, some dollar amount of the value that's extracted, whereas this is a profits tax. I think in some ways is more friendly to the mining companies than what you see in some other states.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry. So one follow-up then. So beyond the taxing structure, which sounds like it's kind of unique everywhere, do any other states have these similarly very unique distribution, I won't say schemes, because I think that's a negative word here in this committee, but this distribution mechanisms for that are locally governed as compared to just going into state general fund as most other business taxes are?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, I really haven't looked very much at that, but almost all of these structures in other states do have a way of specially compensating the local areas, and oftentimes there are what, you know, economists call externalities associated with these operations that, you know, sort of justify even sort of more compensation for the locals for some of the adverse effects of being near some of these operations. I'm not sure that the kind of mines that we're talking about here have those, you know, those kind of costs. But yes, it's typical to give the locals typically even a bigger share.
Representative Dolly?
Excuse me. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline, I was just curious. On the money that goes to the general fund, I understand that it's divided up 50% to schools and 50% to the University of Minnesota. Do you know if that 50% that goes to the schools, is that just schools in the Iron Range area?
Representative Moline?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, it's actually 50% to the general fund, 40% K through 12, and 10% to the University of Minnesota. And if you don't mind going off the general rules again, if I could defer to Representative Rukavina, who knows.
Ms. Schill?
Who knows where our.
Ms. Schill?
It's statewide.
Yeah, it is statewide. And yes, the percentages are correct as Representative Moline stated, 50% to the general fund, 40% to education, K-12, and 10% to the University of Minnesota.
Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Moline. Have you then talked to different school districts to find out what their position is on this? I mean, assuming because they're going to have a loss in revenue, they won't be able to realize these funds. Have you gotten any feedback from the school districts associations that we have here in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, right now the way that we have our tax structure for the taconite tax distribution, as I said, is the same for our local school districts as it will be under the non-ferrous materials, so they are still getting that money. And as far as school districts statewide, I guess I have less knowledge on that.
Representative Anderson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moline, so, okay, we don't have feedback there. Have you talked to the University of Minnesota at all to find out what their thoughts are as far as the loss of revenue that they won't see because of this change at all, or have you gotten any feedback from them?
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I have not because currently there's no fiscal impact since none of these mining operations are up and running. And, you know, I guess that's, so because of that, I wouldn't classify it as lost revenue because currently they aren't getting a dime from non-ferrous mining because currently we don't have any of those operations up and running. They will still be getting their 10% just out of a percentage, which is more in line with, as we've stated, how we tax our taconite and how corporations are taxed in Minnesota.
Great.
Representative Anderson. Okay. I see that there are no further questions. I'm sorry, Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline, how many non-ferrous mining operations are anticipated to go online in the next, say, 10 years?
Representative Moline?
Mr. Chair, Representative, in the next 10 years, I mean, we hope that Polymet for sure will be within that time frame. You know, of course, we've had many barriers as far as our environmental permitting goes, which is why we've taken some steps to hopefully expedite those processes. But I'd say Polymet is our one that is the closest to being in operation.
Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline, so House File 1 is a very good thing in terms of jobs in the economy up there. But do you know what the projected capacity, production capacity of the Polymet operation will be when it does come online?
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Are you talking about how much income they will be paying in taxes or they're anticipated what they'll be paying?
Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was actually referring to the amount of actual production of non-ferrous minerals that will be coming out, say, in a year.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have those numbers in front of me. I can certainly get them to you.
Okay.
Representative Wardlaw.
Useful. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline, do you have any idea how much revenues the Polymet operation is anticipated to generate in a year when it does become fully operational?
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I believe that they're anticipating in paying around $13 million their first year of operation, overall total.
Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline, and $13 million, and that, what is that exact $13 million? Paying $13 million of what?
In
what?
Mr. Chair and Representative, that would be $13 million overall in what they'd be paying in taxes, and then that would be divvied up under my, hopefully under my bill, which is where a percent of that would be going to the state general fund, and the other would be the net proceeds tax.
Representative Wardlow?
Thank you.
Here, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this is for Representative Moline, or maybe Representative Rukavina can...
I think what we'll do, Representative Drazkowski, Representative Rukavina, could you please join Representative Moline at the table? I mean, you're doing a fine job or anything, but then we then there's no to this point, and then I feel better.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Members, I'm looking at 3.18 and 3.19. Apparently, the bill contains a provision here where they're kind of swapping the... Swapping the focus of where some of the monies goes, and like Representative Downey, I'm struggling to wrap my head around these taconite and non-ferrous taxes. But I've got a sheet in front of me about the Taconite Area Environmental Protection Fund, and it, you know, 3.18, we're actually decreasing the emphasis on the Douglas Johnson Economic Protection Trust Fund, and then increasing emphasis on the Taconite Environmental Protection Fund. And I've got a sheet in front of me. Apparently in law in 2009, we distributed some of this money for street repairs and road upgrades and community centers and city garage construction, trail construction, Cook County Airport project, and a variety of other things, that tennis courts that don't seem to be environmental protection related. So, Representative, maybe you can shed a little light on that for us.
Representative Rukavina.
Chair, Representative Drazkowski. The what's happening in the bill is, as Representative Moline indicated, is to get those two funds, which are at the Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Board agency, exactly or close to what they currently are with taconite taxes. The Doug Johnson Fund is a endowment. It was called the 2002 Fund before Representative Abrams named it after the longtime Senator Doug Johnson, who was retiring that year. And the reason it was called the 2002 Fund is because when taconite mining started in 55 at the LTV plant, which is closed now, not because they ran out of ore, but it just bankruptcies in the steel industry and Reserve Mining Company, they thought the ore would run out by about the year 2000. And that's why they named it that, and that's why they created this trust fund, so that it there was a little bit of money left. The interest is probably, I think, $4-5 million a year, and it's spent on economic development projects. The other fund, the Environmental Protection Fund, I actually wasn't around back then. I don't know how it got that name. Maybe Representative Carlson remembers, because I don't. But out of that fund, you can spend it on either economic development or public works, because remember, the local mines don't pay a property tax. And so when you have a sewer plant that gets levied on the taxpayers, or a anything else, a building, a city hall that gets levied on the taxpayers, and on the local businesses, the mining companies don't pay. They don't have to pay, even though, you know, in the case of Eveleth, for example, their biggest water user, they pay nothing other than, when you fix the water plant, which happened recently because of blasting, they didn't pay anything. The local property taxers had to pay it all. So that's kind of a public works and economic development fund. How it ever got the name Environmental Protection Fund, I don't know. Maybe who knows why I wasn't here. But it sounds good.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Rook.
And Mr. Chair, to the last point, when you see those appropriations, that was special that year because LTV, with the bankruptcy, we captured, after the bankruptcy was all over, I think about, I'm looking around to see if that's about, I don't know how many million, I think it was, because of the bankruptcy, we captured, if it was seven or some million dollars, and Commissioner Lehman, Governor Palente's commissioner, we were doing a lot of trying to get economic development, but there was nothing going on. The economy was starting to get bad, and we appropriated for a number of public works projects. It was a one-time thing because of the bankruptcy.
Person Drazkowski.
Mr. Chair, I'd be curious, has there been, I probably should know this, but has there been an audit done on this at all? Is anybody's aware of?
Or Person Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, I think the legislative auditor, Mr. Nobles, does one about every 2 or 3 years.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Rukavina and Representative Moline.
Okay, we have one person with questions. We'll go to Representative Runbeck, but before we do, just a little outline for the rest of the day here. I'd like to get to, after the Runbeck question, I'd like to get the Anderson Bill 1120. The Davids bills we're just going to hold for a little bit later. And members, House File 42 will be the will be amending on the tax bill. Will be starting on tomorrow at 9 o'clock. So we're not going to do anything with any of the Davids bills today. We will go from this bill to the Anderson bill and call it a day. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and perhaps to Representative Rukavina. I'm sure there's been some back-of-the-napkin calculations on what, of course, this Polymet mine gets going, what it would deliver in terms of property taxes and so on. And just curious, because I've really never heard the explanation in terms of why we don't, for example, use these funds more of an offset to LGA. What is the interplay between LGA and the taconite tax, and then to be this non-ferrous tax?
Representative Rukavina.
There are offsets on the school distribution formula. I think there are some, but I'm not sure. I think we had a big argument, and maybe Joel can help me about the LGA offsets, but it's a, again, I do want to emphasize that unlike other businesses that pay on a school district levy or a city levy for whatever, there's no way you can do it other than a distinct law change to somehow figure that out. And so there are different...
Mr. Michael, to the Runbeck question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, the longstanding practice in Minnesota has been to not take the taconite municipal aid into account in calculating LGA. For a short period of time in the last decade, there was a partial offset that went into effect, I think, in like taxes payable in 2005 or 4, and was in effect for a couple of years and then was repealed.
Representative Runbeck.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious then, too, will these new funds, if they occur, will they supplant more or less what the taconite funds had been delivering to the region? I mean, because there's been some downturn there. How does that all look?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rondica, I can't answer that. I don't think they would. The taconite mines, some of them, there is a downturn. Taconite taxes, they're really, you know, much different. They're based on a three-year average. So ironically, some of the cities and schools where the mines actually are, because of that 17 million tons, normally they mine around close to 40 million. In the good old days when there were two more taconite plants, it was around 60 million tons a year. But now they're down to about 40, and it's a three-year average. This year, I think they're going to get it back up to a little over 38 million because it's a pretty good year and there's high demand. During the huge depression, they went to 17 million. It was the lowest production of ore, I believe, except for 1 year during the Great Depression. And so, ironically, there's cities and towns that have the mines and schools that have the mines, and they're getting less money than other communities who are locked and grandfathered in these formulas that are 100 miles away that are getting more money that have wealthier property tax bases. And so it's really a, you know, I guess Mr. Strom upstairs, when we were looking at some school taxes, described it kind of as Byzantine in the way it is. I don't think that the net proceeds tax, if we ever get copper nickel mining, will just be coming in and be treated whatever way we would treat them as new revenue for a city or a school.
Representative Runbeck?
A growth in their local base.
Thank you, Representative. And just some background, maybe Mr. Michael. We do have something called taconite fiscal disparities. And is that a whole separate stream of dollars, and where does that fit into the picture?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, the Iron Range taconite tax relief area does have fiscal disparities, but fiscal disparities purely relates to the property tax. And so to the extent that there's new commercial and industrial property tax base on the range, it, like in the metro area, it goes into this pool and gets, you know, reallocated across the range as a theory, you know, and for the purpose of sort of equalizing the amount of tax base that's available across the whole area. But keep in mind, that's a totally separate matter from this, because these mines and the processing plants that will be built for them will not pay property taxes. And so the proceeds tax money that will be generated by those mines will get, as under Representative Moline's bill provides, get distributed under these formulas to supplement the similar amounts that are distributed on from the production tax that they have now from the mines that are operating up there.
Representative Runbeck.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, members, for the questions, and thank you, Representative Moline. What I'm going to do here, I'm going to lay, well, first of all, Representative Rukavina, would this be a bill to be able to add where they had previous mines, Hanna Mining and Fillmore County, to the IRRRB? The chair lays over House File 974 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill is what we've decided to go with here. So it's still in tax committee. Representative Anderson. Representative Anderson moves House File 1120. Thank you very much, Representative Moline. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is about repealing the sales and use tax that we have on ringtones. This was put in place just a few years ago, and this is part of the governor's budget as well to do this repeal. It puts us out of compliance with the sales and use tax agreement. Minnesota is one of 44 states that is part of this compact to have greater continuity across the states in how sales and use tax is done, and so this just fixes that so that we're not out of compliance and that we don't jeopardize our authority on the compact or face potential fines.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative Anderson. And Representative Anderson has moved House File 1120. Are there any amendments? Okay, no amendments. Is there anyone in the audience that would wish to testify with concerns on House File 1120? And again, we're not voting on this bill today, but anyone that has any would like to speak in favor of House File 1120. And I think Representative Anderson has done a good job of describing what it does. Any questions from members of the committee? With that, I will lay over House File 1120 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Members, will see you tomorrow, the next day, and for a long, long time.
Chair?
We'll look forward to, Representative Lencheski.
Sorry. We just sent you a note.
You just sent me a note.
Maybe you could just answer.
The answer is yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We were just looking around. We think about 20 members of this committee don't serve on property taxes, so we're hoping, kind of, we don't want to make the assumption, but we assume we'll have a walkthrough of the entire property division report. And I know since the overwhelming majority of this committee doesn't serve on that committee, there'll be lots of questions, and just wanted to make sure we were going to have that before we started amendments. Thank you.
Representative Lencheski, we will do that. We're not going to be taking the hours and hours of testimony that you sat through, and thank you again. I'll tell you what, if you want to go to the front table, we'll do that to stay for a couple minutes here. That's why I ask for anyone wanting to testify for or against the bill. Okay, if you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and we will be adjourning at about 5 minutes to 12. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Mary O'Connor. I live in Brooklyn Center.
Welcome to the committee.
Corporations receive benefits from the state of Minnesota, so they should pay taxes like individuals and smaller businesses. But if you take away their tax exemptions, you could reduce their tax rate. I believe the sales tax should be reduced and eventually eliminated. That would help businesses and individuals. Estates should only pay taxes when estates are sold for a profit. When a farm or business or estate is inherited, no tax should be paid. Individual income tax rates could be reduced if tax exemptions are eliminated. I am married and I am over 65, but I shouldn't get a tax credit for that. My husband and I give to charities, but we shouldn't get tax credits for that. If someone gives money to a needy family member, they can't deduct it from their taxable income. But if they give it to a charity, it may be partially deductible. Isn't helping a family member more important? If you eliminate tax exemptions, tax returns would be short, simple, and fair, and you could reduce tax rates. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Any questions?
I do have a handout for a simplified tax return.
That'd be wonderful if a page could please pass the handout out. And we thank you very much, Ms. O'Connor. Any questions of Ms. O'Connor? Is there anyone else who would like to testify on anything? Okay, with that, good government all the time. We are adjourned, and members, we will get the handout from Ms. O'Connor here. Thank you, Ms. O'Connor.